talking politics with this gentleman who is, I don't know where he is. It looks like he's at his palatial estate somewhere in either Chicago or the western suburbs. Talk show host David Seaton. Welcome back to the show, David.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
And before we go any further, tell folks everything they need to know about following your talk show. I had your partner in crime on last week. Now it's your turn. Go ahead.
Every Friday night, join us at 9 p.m. from 9 p.m. to midnight on WVON 1690 a.m., The Talk of Chicago. And you can hear the Buchanan and Seaton show with Atiba Buchanan and David Seaton. And do not let a day go by without going to www.seatonspeaks.com, where you can get political analyses on all of the stories that are going on right now.
And David Seaton is not only the co-host with Atiba Buchanan, they're dear friends. They go back many, many years, and it's an interesting friendship. As people who listen to their show know, as people who've listened to David and or Atiba when they're on my show, Atiba is more of the Bernie persuasion. He's a bit on the leftist side of the Democratic spectrum, and David is more of the Joe Biden persuasion, more in the center. And one of my great joys was watching David debate Micah Utrecht, the Bernie bro. That was about 6 months ago. It was a whole different world, David Seaton, you and it was just a different world. All right, we got to talk about Kamala Harris. We got to talk about Donald Trump's racism. We have to talk about Black Lives Matter. And I think it's about time that David Seaton and I had a conversation about one, William Jefferson Clinton, a mini obsession of mine these days as I beg my Dems, my beloved Dems, for whom I voted for many, many years, to cut the cord with Billy C. And I'm really curious what David Seaton has to say on that subject. He's been awfully just kind of mysterious. He won't let me know, so he's going to drop that one on me. All right, we'll start at the top. Kamala Harris. I've been drinking the Kamala Kool-Aid for a long time. David Seaton, as you know, I'm a fan of Kamala Harris. What's your thoughts about her?
I've been one of the individuals who said as far back as a year ago that Joe Biden was going to be the Democratic nominee. And I've said at least for that long that Kamala Harris would be the perfect VP. As we've had a lot of people, talking about, well, could it be Susan Rice? Susan Rice wasn't going to be a good pick because they were going to bring up Benghazi. Elizabeth Warren wasn't a good pick because she was too far left, and she was, she's 70 plus years old. So if you've got any issues about Joe Biden making it for 4 or 8 years in the White House, you certainly can't pick Elizabeth Warren. Who else? Val Demings was a bad choice, or wasn't as good a choice. She was an ex-police officer out of Florida. They were going to dig through her past, and they were going to find something. Stacey Abrams didn't have enough gravitas and not a robust enough resume. At the end of the day, Kamala Harris checks off a couple of boxes. She's a woman of color, so she's going to enthuse the people on the left. She's going to enthuse minorities and suburban women to come out. She's an ex-AG of California, and a lot of people have said that she was heavy-handed during her term as AG, but then that's going to take away the entire talking point from the Trumpists by saying that she's soft on crime or anything like that. She checks a couple of different boxes. She's, as the AG, she managed over 7,000 attorneys in California. You have probably a couple of hundred people in your staff as vice president, so she has the managerial experience. She brings a lot of progressive ideas from her short-lived presidential run to the ticket. She's a woman of color. She's a woman. And this is the perfect time, I think, for a candidacy of someone who fits that her particular demographics.
Do you see any downside?
I do not see any downside, to be honest with you. There's always, the Trumpists are going to try, like I said, the Trump side is going to try and attack her for being, all of the attacks that they can levy against her, her record speaks to the opposite. So, again, I don't see any downside. Unfortunately, and you and I were talking about this earlier, there's already this whisper campaign out there saying that she's really not Black. They're saying it. And unfortunately, and in my timeline over the past 24 hours, the most the biggest group of people I've seen, I've read attacking whether or not she's black are other black people. So, you know, I've got to actually write something about that in terms of, you know, the ethnogenesis of black people in Jamaica are from Africa. Her father is Jamaican. Her mother is Indian. She's a person of color. And quite frankly, she's biracial, just like Barack Obama was. But everybody black said that, you know, everybody said that Barack Obama was black. So if he was black and had an African father from Kenya, I don't know how she's not black with an African father from Jamaica.
Yeah. By the way, that's another thing that Trump folks are behind as well. The she's not black element. Well, we can go. Look, you and I have talked about this, David Seaton. Republicans play to win. And when you play to win, you play dirty. And they play dirty. That's how Donald Trump got to be president in 2016. They're going to double down to keep him in office. So every trick at their disposal, they will use. You know that. I know that. So let's deal with this issue about whether she is, quote, unquote, quote, black. I do not see that. I do not see black voters not voting for her, voting for Donald Trump on the grounds that she's not, quote, unquote, black. Do you agree with me that this is more like a Twitter issue?
Yeah, I would agree with you that a lot of the conversation that's being had online is not necessarily what's being had in people's households. I don't think that anyone who's seriously dealing with coronavirus, who's lost their job, who's about to be evicted, who's worried about not getting enough money to live on in because the Congress has not stepped up on dealing with, you know, unemployment payments. Anybody who's dealing with those issues is not sitting around debating about what percentage of African DNA Kamala Harris has. They've got bigger fish to fry. And at the end of the day, the situation is so dire for most Americans. I think they're going to concentrate on the issues this time. I don't think Trump is going to be able to beguile a lot of people with superficial issues like he did with Hillary Clinton in her emails.
All right. Well, we all know what Trump's all about when it comes to black vote. Suppress the black vote. Do that by making it more difficult for people to register. Doing that by making it more difficult for people to get to the polls. Undermine people's confidence and faith in voting by mail while you prop it up in your own districts. So there's a lot of contradictory things. And the other attempt by Donald Trump is to feed cynicism. So one lay is, she's not even black. That's like they put that out. She's not black. She's not really a black person. So why are you excited about her? And the other thing, David Seaton, is to talk about how somehow or other her record as a district attorney, a prosecuting attorney in California, makes her less open-minded to criminal justice reform than Donald Trump. That's something else you're going to hear a lot coming, particularly try to, again, suppress voting on the left by making people more disillusioned. How effective do you think that tactic will be?
Unfortunately, that's a conversation that needs to be had with a different level of candor within the black community. Even the attacks against Joe Biden by saying that he was the author of the crime bill in the 90s. Is a complete red herring. Number one, Joe Biden is one of 100 senators. So whether he wrote it, co-authored it, sponsored it, voted for it out of committee, whatever he did, he had to have another 51 people minimum within the Senate, another 50 people vote with him for that bill to have been passed. So to try and hang that around Joe Biden is a red herring. But more importantly, in the African American community, we have to come to grips with the fact that a lot of what was written and passed in that crime bill was based on a lot of things that were being asked of by the black community. The crime bill was an outgrowth of a lot of the violence that was happening in the African American community in the late 80s. There was an outgrowth of the crack epidemic, and black people were saying, "Hey, the police are not, we're prisoners in our own communities. We're prisoners in our own blocks. And a lot of Black people were demanding that government do something about the crime. So, you know, we're guilty in the Black community of a little bit of revisionist history ourselves if we're going to make Joe Biden the sole culprit of the crime bill and then try to say that that's a reason not to vote for him, especially when the alternative is Donald Trump.
In particular, let's emphasize that point. The alternative is Donald Trump, because while he plays, David, the card that somehow or other he is more open-minded to criminal justice reform because of the First Step Act. While he plays that card, he is reviving a George Wallace Law and Order campaign in the middle of the pandemic. And I think ultimately that is his strategy to win.
And it's even more sinister than that. Number one, the First Step Act was not written by Trump or anyone in his administration. The First Step Act was sitting on the shelf and was written by Democrats years before. And the only reason that Donald Trump paid any lip service to it at all is because celebrities like Kim Kardashian were going in and talking to him, and they were soliciting him to get some, you know, like the one woman whose sentence got overturned, I can't think of her name right now, who Kim Kardashian went and spoke to Trump about. But if you or I, Ben, had gone in and tried to get a meeting with Trump about the First Step Act, do you really believe that we would have been able to convince him to sign the First Step Act? No, that was a complete, he was manipulated because he's a simple dilettante nincompoop. And they played on what works with him. They sent in a famous person that gave him some notoriety, and that's why he signed the First Step Act. It's all right. Really as simple as that.
Since you mentioned Kim Kardashian, I'm going to flip-flop what I was going to ask you about. I'll hold off on the Trump's racist strategy for a moment, his George Wallace strategy. He played this card again today, right before you and I started talking, with his Cory Booker tweet. And you mentioned Kim Kardashian. Let's go to Kanye West. Kanye West somebody is trying to get Kanye West's name on the ballot in several states. I don't know how much of a role Kanye West is playing on it, but it's pretty clear to me, David. I said this on the show. It's many times. It's pretty obvious by the investigations, by many credible news outlets, that Kanye West's candidacy is largely being propped up by the Republican Party, especially in Wisconsin. How effective do you think this can be to siphon votes away from Joe Biden?
Everything that I've read something as recently as today said that Kanye West has about 2% support, and that it's that includes the African Americans that would come out and vote for him. But really, that just shows you how really shallow the Trump attempt is to try and siphon Black votes away from Joe Biden, number one. But then number two, it shows how that's their play. Their play was to think, if we put up anyone Black, because, you know, that Donald Trump, he just picked from the list of Black people who he knows. And he knows Kanye West, and Kanye West is a famous rapper. If we get him up there, all of the Black people will vote for him because he's a famous rapper. Let me go on record as one of the few African Americans from Chicago by saying I do not, nor have I ever, been a fan of Kanye West, either his music or anything that he espouses intellectually. And I put intellectually in air quotes because he is, again, devoid of intellectualism.
All right. I'm with you about the Kanye West strategy. It is, if he's at 2% now, you could cut it in half. Okay. And I'm not even sure what portion of that vote would be a Democrats, Black or otherwise.
You would be surprised how many. I mean, I've seen plenty of African-Americans who have said when he first, plenty of African Americans on social media say this or something akin to this. Well, we gave Donald Trump a chance, and so Kanye can't do any worse. Or, you know, what's wrong with us voting for, you know, a Black person if a Black person is running? But then those same people are doing a 180 now that it's Kamala Harris in the VP slot. So, you know, the only person who was going to vote, number one, the people who like Kanye don't vote. And the people who vote don't like Kanye. So that was never going to be a good strategy either way.
That is, you know what? I had to think about what you just said. I think you're really on to something. But that was my argument, for what it's worth, about black voters who said they were going to vote for Donald Trump back in 2016. This is, I've always point this out. People trot out a poll or even an exit poll that says X amount of people have voted for Donald Trump. I'm like, well, when I look, compare that with the actual votes that have come out of precincts, like votes cast, the number falls. And so I think what you're getting at is something really, really true, David, and that is people say one thing and then they don't do it. In other words, they don't vote. You follow what I'm saying? So some guy who says he's going to vote for Kanye West is probably not going to vote at all.
Exactly. A person who is savvy enough to show up to vote and then get up to the machine and then write in the name of Kanye West because they know they can do that and they know how to do that, that's not the typical demographic who's going to a Kanye West concert and or sitting at home listening to his music. There's no intersectionality between the African-American who's going to vote no matter what and someone who's a Kanye fan.
All right, now let's get into strategy number one for the Trump reelection campaign. I talked to Atiba Buchanan, and I, when he was on the show last week, talked a lot about this, sort of undermining the post office in order to undercut vote by mail. That seems to be a strategy by the Trump campaign. And as I told Atiba, David, it's perplexing because Donald Trump is going to need vote by mail as much as Joe Biden is going to need it, because people are going to be afraid to vote in the pandemic. What's your sense of what Trump's up to with this vote by mails?
All of the data that I've seen says that Republicans are by 60 to 65% more inclined to vote in person, and about 60 to 65% of Democrats are inclined to vote by mail. So that's the data that's driving his decision to try and incapacitate the post office. I just have one thing to say to, you know, every African American out there under the sound of my voice. Unless you're going to get an absentee vote, and you can get an absentee vote, you can send in that application now. It will vary by state when they'll send it to you in the mail. But the earlier you send that vote, he's only going to be able to doing if he's able to implement everything that he wants to implement using his strategies to handicap the post office, he's only going to be able to impact 1 to 2% of the votes that come in by mail, because it's decentralized. That's one of the things that makes our vote so difficult to orchestrate and or to destroy the integrity of, because it's decentralized and it's managed at the county level. I've been an election judge before. I've worked in an election before. It's very difficult. It would be almost impossible for one person to impact what's going on because of the way that we manage our votes by county and by state. So that said, do what you have to do and get out there and vote. It's that serious. We cannot afford another 4 years of Donald Trump. Another 4 years of Donald Trump could very well destroy this country. So do what you have to do. It's worth it to chance standing in line and contracting COVID if it's going to get Donald Trump out of office.
How do you plan to vote? In line, do you plan to go to the polling booth or do you plan to vote by mail?
I looked into it in the last 48 to 72 hours. I'm probably just going to show up early. In Illinois, you can vote as early as October 19th. So I'm probably just going to show up on October 19th at 6 a.m. and just vote in person.
Yeah. I think I'll be there right with you. I'll be the guy right next to you, Dave. We'll go have breakfast afterwards. I'm voting as soon as I can and voting for Joe Biden. I put it out there.
Exactly.
All right, this is no joke. What you said was so true. It's an existential threat. And I've been harping on this all day today. I got so sidetracked by the looting that went down on Monday morning and the political fallout here in Chicago, David. And I didn't even get a chance to really take that deep dive onto Donald Trump's insane executive orders that he issued from in a speech at his country club in New Jersey or wherever that was. The man has freaking lost his mind. He's proposing a plan, a payroll tax deferral in, I have the whole thing in quotes, such a scam that will end up potentially bankrupting Social Security. I mean,
but you know what the sad part is? What's far sadder is that the average person, all they hear is tax cut. Oh, I get to keep 7% more in my check, 7.65% to be exact, because it's seven, it's a six some percent, and then it's another 1.45 cent for Medicare. So it adds up to like, I think 7.65% exactly. But as you said, it's a deferral. So you've got to pay it back. That's why when Trump said, hey, if I get reelected, I'm going to make it permanent. He does these sleights of hand because he knows the average American out there is stupid and they don't know what's going on. They don't understand that when he says, oh, I'll make it permanent if you reelect me, that the first thing they should say is, oh, that means it's temporary then. And then he says, well, if you reelect me, you won't have to pay it back. The second bell should go off and say, oh, not only is it temporary, but I've got to pay it back. No, that's a bad idea. But he plays on the ignorance of the average American. I hate to say it like that. I've tried to find a more politic way of saying it, but we just have to just come out and just say it. Most Americans are dumb. They're uninformed, misinformed, underinformed. And that's how Donald Trump became president.
And do you see the reaction of the country to COVID as evidence of?
Of course. The flu pandemic of 1918. If you go back and you look at those pictures, people were wearing masks. There was no debate about whether or not you should wear a mask and whether or not that's a good or a bad thing. We're talking about the same period of time where we eradicated polio globally. Why? Because people got vaccinations. We're supposedly living in the most technologically advanced time in the history of our species, and we're arguing about whether or not airborne pathogens can be blocked by wearing a mask and whether or not you should or should not take vaccinations. I mean, yes, there's an anti-intellectualism that has swept the right. And that's why whatever happens to the Republican Party be damned, as far as I'm concerned. They can go the way of the dodo. They can reinvent themselves or do whatever they have to do. But those of us who know better, those of us who know better have a responsibility to do whatever it is that we have to do to keep the anti-intellectualism, religious, fundamentalist, right-wing Republicans from taking control of power ever again in this country.
Well put. And I got to tell you, it was on full display in an article I read, David, that I didn't even mention to you in our pre-show. It was in the newspaper, about a school district in Georgia, suburban Georgia, where they opened
400 people contracted COVID-19.
Yeah, you saw that. And then there's still a contingent of leaders, parents, and officials in that school district who are arguing that it's unnecessary to wear a mask or that masks cause the virus in the first place, and that they should continue the policies that got them in trouble. It reminds me of the response that Republicans had when Herman Cain died of the virus. They're just determined not to learn any lessons from it. They're determined to just pursue the same, what you call anti-intellectual, anti-science policies that got to this trouble in the first place.
But the dirty little secret that no one will say, and it's the one thing that connects all these dots, the underlying sickness that drives this type of behavior is religion, and it's fundamentalist religion. When you have people, I was watching a YouTube video. This was going back maybe 3 months, and CNN was at this church and they were having this big church service and they were interviewing this woman who was coming out of the church, and the person from CNN was saying, "Hey, aren't you concerned about contracting this virus?" And the woman said, "I'm covered by the blood of Jesus, so nothing can happen to me." When you have people out there who are taking the Bible literally, when they are reading a document that is 2,000 to 5,000 years old, and they are trying to apply, if you read a book that was 30 years old, there'd be some stuff that was lost in translation. If you and I jumped into a time machine and we went back and talked to ourselves in high school when we were writing a paper, and we said, "Hey, why are you going to the library? Why don't you just Google it?" Our high school selves, 30 or 40 years ago, wouldn't know what we mean. But we're taking a document that was written thousands of years ago, halfway around the globe, from a different culture. There was a nomadic pre-industrial civilization, and we're trying to apply it to today when we know better today. We know that there are airborne viruses and pathogens, and we know how sickness works. And you got people saying, the blood of Jesus, that's dangerous. Religion is, there's no surprise that there's a heavy intersectionality with how far right you are as a conservative and how religious you are, which, by the way, also is the foundation of Donald Trump being this patriarchal grandfather-like figure, and how they give him all deference in the face of his prevarications and his ineptitude. So it's all tied together.
Wow. David, you and I have known each other for over a year now. You've been a very gracious guest on my show many, many times. I can't even count them all. I've never heard you on the subject of religion before. I don't know if the subject just never came up. All the time we talk off the air, it never came up. You sound like Bill Maher.
Well, what I will say is, from a religious point of view, I'm a recovering Christian.
Wow. Let me just take a moment to say that the views and opinions of David Seaton do not necessarily reflect. I hope you raise this with a team on your show the next time. It'll be interesting to see.
We've had some very specific show. I wrote something very recently, and we had an interesting professor on, Edward Blum. I'm sorry, and we were talking about the danger of a white Jesus, and we were talking about historically how it's inaccurate and how it's been the fertile soil for the seeds of racism and especially in the Americas. So again, for the sake of argument, for those of you who are listening, I'm not necessarily saying that I don't believe in God. I'm saying that I will have nothing to do with religion.
Organized religion.
Right.
Yeah. All right. And we could do a whole show on that, because that is, I would love to go there, but I want to stay focused and get back to our list of things that I wanted to talk to you about. And now we're coming to the big daddy of it all. Donald Trump's reelection strategy is essentially rests on his ability to produce so much racial hostility, fear on the part of white people toward black people, that he gets a George Wallace style reactionary vote from swing voters, if you will, that add to his base and give him enough votes to win. Not a majority. He knows he'll never win a majority. But in this crazy electoral college system that the Democrats are too foolish to fight and have accepted a victory. How realistic is that as a concern to you, David?
Well, I'm going to be honest with you. I'm going to say something that is going to come as a surprise to a lot of your listeners. Donald Trump and his racial George Wallace-like strategy to create animus between black and white people is nothing compared to Ariel Atkins of Black Lives Matter and the fodder that she has offered to that strain of individuals and exacerbating the tensions that already exist between black and white people in this country. when Ariel Atkins came out earlier this week, and she said on the record about the looters that went into downtown Chicago, and she went on record and said, not only don't arrest those people who were looting, but let them go and don't arrest anybody else, because those people who are stealing from those stores, that's reparations, and those stores are insured. If you go and you look, there's probably a dozen different articles. All you have to do is scroll down to the comments and read the vitriol that is coming from the average white reader who's reading that. That it's going to be that's going to bust this thing wide open. And at this point, Black Lives Matter, if the majority of Black Lives Matter members do not draw a distinction between themselves and the Ariel Atkins of Black Lives Matter, Black Lives Matter is going to lose all credibility, and that will be the reason why Donald Trump gets reelected.
Wow. All right. Let's break that down. What are Democrats, how are Democrats, in your humble opinion, supposed to respond to that kind of rhetoric?
I think, again, going back to Kamala Harris, that's what makes Kamala Harris the perfect VP candidate, because a lot of Black people were attacking her. I read stuff that was saying that today, where people were saying that Joe Biden wrote the crime bill and Kamala Harris enforced it. So the record that she has as AG of California will not allow Trump and his acolytes to tie Black Lives Matter around Kamala Harris's neck, because her record as an AG is completely antithetical to Black Lives Matter. Now, and again, speaking as a Black man, I am completely in support of Black Lives Matter. I am completely not in support of excusing criminal behavior and using that as de facto reparations. That's completely asinine. Like I've said to you before, and I say this all the time on our show, you know, Black people represent 14% of this population. The only way we're going to get our priorities enacted into legislation and enforced is going to be creating coalitions with other like-minded individuals. That's how the abolition of slavery didn't happen because just Black people were anti-slavery. It happened because we had coalitions with the majority who also wanted to abolish slavery. Same thing for civil rights. Same thing for the getting rid of Jim Crow. That we're a minority, so we have to have alliances with other people so that we can get to 50% plus one, because that's how a democracy works. And stances like this that Ariel Atkins of Black Lives Matter took is inexcusable.
Well, you're going to get a moment. I know this, knowing politics the way I do, where definitely Kamala Harris, maybe and maybe even Joe Biden will be asked point blank to respond to that comment. And then people will be, you know, reading her response to see, you know, how strong a stance she took and whether she was, how she nuanced it or how she set it up. They'll be studying it. You know what I'm saying? To see.
Yeah, they're going
to
parse it. They're going to parse it. But they have to be. And this is where Democrats typically, and you and I and Atiba have talked about this before, too. Democrats typically have very poor messaging. This is someplace else where Kamala Harris is going to be able to shine. All the Democrats have to say is, we support Black Lives Matter, but we do not support looting and robbing stores. If you break the law, you should go to jail. That said, we support Black Lives Matter, and we support their agenda of trying to forward the Black agenda. If someone comes to me and says, do you like anything about Donald Trump? I will say, I really appreciate the fact that he signed the First Step Act. Other than that, there's nothing else about Donald Trump that I can support. So you can be intellectually honest and point out where someone has done something good with whom you disagree, and you can point out something bad with whom you agree, and that doesn't make you intellectually dishonest.
All right. Now, when you said that, immediately my mind started scrambling. What could I say that I like that Donald Trump has done in the last 3 years? When you said that, and I would say, yeah, the First Step Act. he hasn't invaded any countries, has he, that I know of? So I'm literally I'm really bending over backwards, David, to say something nice about him. I'm really curious how your show is going to go Friday. I know you and Atiba are going to talk about that Black Lives Matter comment, and
I already know what he's going to say, and you know, he'll make his point, and I'll make mine, and we'll let the listeners decide as always.
Yeah, what's he going to say?
Oh, he's going to say that it is reparations, and that if it weren't for lack of opportunity, if people had jobs and if people had opportunity and if they had the things that they need, they wouldn't have to steal. And the reason why all of those conditions of Black people are being perpetuated is because of white supremacy and racism.
Well, I mean, I think there's a lot of validity to what he's saying. And absolutely. I know one of the things one day we'll have a discussion about economic development in Chicago and the TIF program, et cetera. We're not going to do that now because I have an agenda.
This is what I'll say in response to that.
Yeah.
If those people, if the people who were looting, if they were breaking into a jewel and they were stealing bread and meat and fruit and bottled water, if they were breaking into if they were going into a local convenience store and they were taking, you know, bags of chips and jerky because those were the things that they needed because they were hungry and they were trying to do something to survive, that's a completely different conversation. But when you're talking about people who are getting up from Inglewood, getting in their cars, driving downtown, throwing bricks through the Nike store and through the Coach store windows and stealing items out of those stores. When you're talking about groups, hordes of people who are standing in front of 18-wheeler semis that are driving through the south side of Chicago, and they're distracting the driver while another two dozen people are trying to open up the back of the truck and rob it. When you're talking about actions like that, that has nothing to do with reparations. That is just wanton criminality. And Black people especially can't advocate for that because it diminishes the importance of when racism does happen to us and it's egregious and needs to be addressed. Because if we stand up for these criminal acts, we're not going to have allies when something really is racist and happens.
All right, David Seaman. Very powerfully said. All right, let's move on to Billy C., Bill Clinton, William Jefferson Clinton. We'll close it down with this. And I'll do the setup. I sent you the article, but I'll do the setup for maybe people who are listening have not read the article I wrote for the Reader. I urge everybody to check it out and weigh in. So this idea had been in my mind, you know, for a while, David, but I hadn't really thought it through. And then I was watching John Lewis's funeral, and Bill Clinton got up and gave his oration, and it just snapped. And I just said to myself, I am sick and tired of Bill Clinton. I'm sick and tired of him getting invited to state funerals. I'm sick and tired of him getting invited to significant Democratic events like the convention next week. He'll be a featured speaker. I'm tired of his voice. I feel that he's doing a disservice to the party I've always supported, to the ideas that I hope are fostered, to the effort to defeat Donald Trump. And so I put my thoughts down on paper. And essentially, the theme could be summed up with one sentence: cut the cord, Dems, and treat Bill Clinton like a pariah, because that's what he deserves to be treated as. And we got a lot of reaction from a lot of people. And I was just wondering what your thoughts are on this.
I will say three different things. Number one, Donald, and I read your article, so it was brilliantly written, by the way. Here's the one thing that Republicans could never wrap their minds around as far as how Bill Clinton has retained his popularity over the years in spite of his adultery with Monica Lewinsky and with whomever else. Half of the people in this country are either divorced because of infidelity, or they're broken up. They broke up with someone because of infidelity, or what have you. So at the end of the day, most people can understand that how you can err as a human. That you cheated on your wife, or you had some indiscretions in your marriage. I think most people can understand that. And because the Republicans were so over the top during the impeachment, that it didn't build any goodwill on his wife at the end of the day. Now, I did read your article about, you know, him taking advantage of his position as president to get involved with Monica Lewinsky, and she was a young girl. That, to me, that's kind of not the point. Simply because most relationships, most people, two people seldom ever meet in life at parity. either you got a fat bald guy who's got a lot of money who meets a young pretty girl and she's looking for stability and he's looking for arm candy, or it could be the reverse. It could be an older woman who sees a young guy who's attractive and she's got money. I mean, the saying that someone's going to meet at, that two people are going to meet and they're going to be completely 100% at parity is quixotic. And then you could evaluate any relationship and say, well, he made more money, or she was more powerful, or he had a nicer car. So, at the end of the day, proximity is what determines who you get with. And that's the bottom line. Proximity is the biggest variable or determining variable on who you wind up getting involved with romantically. Third, I'll say, as far as the Democratic Party and their embrace of Donald Trump.
Bill Clinton.
Bill Clinton. Yeah. That's how parties operate. I mean, let's be honest. George W. Bush is still hanging around, and he's a war criminal. Until Donald Trump came around, they said Ronald Reagan's name more than they say the name of Jesus Christ. So, the fact that Bill Clinton is still, he's kind of the patriarch of the Democratic Party, save Jimmy Carter. But Jimmy Carter is out there, building houses for Habitat Habitat for Humanity, and trying to, so he's not necessarily as involved. But, that's the way the parties are. Bill Clinton, did he have some indiscretions? Yes.
Discretions?
Yeah, indiscretions. Yeah.
All right. Look, I have to say this. Wow. That was quite a riff. I got to give you credit, man. That was a riff. All right. And it was like, I'm trying to break it down point by point. Number one, George Bush was not invited back for the Republican convention. And more to the point, Richard Milhouse Nixon was never invited back after the disgrace of Watergate. He was never invited back. So even the Republicans, they will only go so far. And I say that even the Republicans, because I would say as upset I am with the Dems welcoming Clinton, I think it's far more egregious that the Republicans have embraced Donald Trump and made him their leader. So okay. I am able to make distinctions here, okay?
We are talking about a president who paid off a porn star and got her pregnant or had sex with her while his wife was pregnant with his now 13-year-old son.
Yes, I'm well aware. And very important. I hope you make. I just got to say this. Very important is right now fighting off a lawsuit dealing with allegations of rape.
Exactly.
E. Jean Carroll's lawsuit has been allowed to continue. She's collecting evidence right now. It's a very Clintonian. Yes, there's a DNA issue, very Clintonian. I think it's on a coat as opposed to a dress. So Republicans out there who talk about law and order, the head of your party who talks about law and order is an accused rapist. So just think about that, Republicans, for a moment. So yes, I'm well aware of utter hypocrisy on the part of the Republican Party.
So I guess at the end of the day, if we're comparing Donald Trump, who possibly raped a woman and was having unprotected sex with a porn star while his wife was pregnant, and we're talking about George W. Bush, who is by all accounts a war criminal, and if he goes anywhere, if he travels anywhere in Europe, Interpol is probably going to pick him up for an outstanding warrant to take him to The Hague. And we compare that to William Jefferson Clinton receiving fellatio from a then intern. We just have to just put things into their proper perspective and realize that there's nuance. And that's why in the law, there's first degree murder and there's involuntary manslaughter and a bunch of stuff in between. We don't just look at the effect and just give everybody the same sentence. Was Bill Clinton wrong? Did he cheat on his wife? He was, yeah, he was immoral, but what he did, there was no law against, and it didn't break his oath as president of the United States. What Trump and George W. Bush did were in, have they have committed crimes that were in contravention of the oath that they took as president of the United States.
By the way, can I just say something about David Seaton? A master rhetorician. I got to give the guy credit. I mean, he's throwing out these points he knows I'm going to agree with. So I go, yeah, you're right. Yeah, you're right. And he's just got that big David Seaton smile on his face. I don't know why half the time a team wants to take a notebook and hit him over the head. But you're absolutely correct. Everything you just said, David Seaton, is absolutely correct. And I'll just say this. Billy Clinton dragged us through hell with Monica Lewinsky, and everything you said on a far less sophisticated level, I was saying back in 1988-99 defending Bill Clinton. I didn't say it nearly as well as you just did, but I said the same things. So many Democrats gave so much passion and energy to defending Clinton, and they did so. And within 4 years, he's flying around on a jet with Jeffrey Epstein. The man has no credibility. It's like he learns nothing. It's like he's determined to go through life making the same old stupid decisions that he's always made because he thinks he's better than anybody else or bigger than anybody else. And so that's why I'm saying, Democrats, cut the cord. This man is now linked to Jeffrey Epstein, one of the most notorious sex traffickers of our time. And it's an embarrassment and a disgrace that a former president would be flying. And now, and then it's all those Clintonian and David Seaton. You recognize them as well as I do. Those Clintonian like evasions, like, you know, he's the master of it. I got to give him credit. You know, he'll deny it without really denying it. You think he denied it? You know, so like I never had sex with that woman, and like, well. Then it depends, like, what does he mean by sex? You know what I'm saying? I mean, and Billy C, Slick Willie. Hey, so divorce with him, right?
All I'm saying is that if every person got lost their job because they received oral sex from someone, we'd have unemployment in far greater than what we had during the Depression or right now. We've got bigger fish to fry. We got bigger things going on than to be overly concerned about the indiscretions of a guy who was president three presidents ago and whether or not he speaks at a funeral. We got bigger things to deal with.
All right, I'll leave it out. I'll be the gracious guy and let you have the last word. All right, one more time, David Seaton, tell everybody where they can hear you and Atiba, and it's a great show. I've been on the show, and I've listened to the show. They just had Tommy Tresor on a couple weeks ago talking TIFFs. So tell everybody where they can hear you.
WVON 1690 AM. You can listen on iHeartRadio. You can just go to WVON.com, or you can go to your car. If you got an old school AM radio, go to 1690 AM. It's on Friday nights from 9 PM to midnight every Friday with Atiba Buchanan and David Seaton. And don't forget, go to SeatonSpeaks.com. That's S as in Sam, E-A-T as in Tom, O-N as in Nancy, speaks with an S.com for anything that you want to discuss political. I've probably got a blog about it, so don't hesitate to go to the blog and get your brain. We're elevating the conversation at SeatonSpeaks.com.
Absolutely. David Seaton, I'll have you on in about 3 weeks. I got to be better about getting Seaton and Buchanan on more frequently because these two gentlemen really know their politics. Thank you very much, David. I appreciate you coming on the show.
No problem.
That's David Seaton. I'm Ben Jarofsky. Take care, everybody.